What's up, everybody? It's your girl Keisha from Put Your Phone Down podcast. I continue to say, like with a big smile on my face, that this year continues to get greater and greater. And as the year continues, I want to bring y'all the best quality of work that I can. Y'all, you know, I always got to give people their flowers in my introduction, but I really want to tell you all that manifestation is real and it works. About last year, I was on Instagram doing my thing, scrolling through, and I'm seeing this guy standing there, okay, with a man bun on and khaki pants and white shirt. And I'm looking at his background singers and they bobbing their head. And I'm looking at the band players and I'm like, what's about to go on? And then it's this beautiful voice that comes out. And I'm like, yo, who is this voice? I didn't even look at the man. I was just traveling through the voice. Who would have known that in 2024, a simple email of me just reaching out and saying, look, can I please hop you on the podcast would lead to something like this happening? His voice is beautiful. And I feel that it touches the world. So whatever you're going through, I want you to go ahead and put on a Dre Scott song. Because it's going to travel you through. Without further ado, I have the voice. Okay. We said Whitney, and Whitney still is the voice, but we have the voice, Mr. Dre Scott online.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. No, thank you for making time for me. So, Dre, you know, during the pre-interview, I talked your ear off. Okay. But you have a history that I think is phenomenal. I think that you are resilient. Okay, so shout out to the Terrell Show because that's actually where I saw you in an interview, and I got a chance to know that your story is just not, you know, a silver spoon. Hey, I wanted to do it, and I hopped up and did it. It was filled with, you know, being a part of the American Idol Top 40. Selected, didn't make it. Then you said, no, I'm coming damn back. I'm coming back. Came back season 11, made it to number 8, which is my favorite numbers, 11 and 8, by the way.
There you
Okay.
go.
And you're still standing. So, Dre, let me know your story.
Well, as far as music goes, well, first of all, thank you for hyping me up like that. I'm gonna have to call you to write my eulogy because the way you made me sound was too good. So thank you.
You're
But as far as music, I've always sang. I never really pursued it. I grew up around athletes. Like most of my friends were like on the football team, or like even like my parents, they played basketball. Same with most of my family. I grew up around sports. Not that I mean, I played sports, but it just wasn't my passion. I loved music. I loved to sing. Specifically, so I actually started singing in bars and like clubs, back in the Bay Area where I'm from, at like the age of 12. I do 3-hour gigs, and I started with Hawaiian music, believe it or not, which a lot of people don't know, and been doing that and kind of just performing and kind of learning crowds and figuring out my voice. And in the midst of that, I kind of have to give my foundation of music to Hawaiian music, because I learned how to harmonize, learn how to transpose, all kind of just by ear, and kind of just kind of going and getting in there. So shout out to called him Uncle Derek. That kind of just took me in. Uncle Derek, Uncle Kika, Auntie Honey, all these people that kind of just brought me in, and also kind of taught me in a sense of like get on the stage and figure it out type of teaching, because to me that's the best way to do it, is you learn by experience. And then we did Idol, and then which I didn't want to do. My mom made me do it. Did not want to do it. Did Idol, and yeah, long story short, the fame comes quick, and then as quick as it comes, it goes even faster. So right after that, I wasn't doing nothing. I was kind of, by contract, I couldn't really do anything, because I wasn't I wasn't picked by the label, so I couldn't really do much. I was still just going back to bar gigs, and then I went to college, moved to Hawaii, went to college, and just kind of, did that. I only, again, please stop me because I'm long-winded, but
No, me too. I wanted to ask you, just to go back a little bit with the American Idol. I know that you mentioned you didn't want to do it, but your mom kind of pushed you. What was that? What was that like? Because we only see little bits of you having to figure out the song, sing the song, get along with other people. What was that space like, at that time?
I mean, for me, I was 16 my first season, or 15, then turned 16 my first season. It was outside. Well, there was two parts of it. The best part of it was being around other creative people. Again, I wasn't surrounded by creatives like that. Like that, most of my friends, like in school or whatever, they're all, again, athletes, or they just weren't like singers or musicians or anything like that. So it was just cool to realize that I have a tribe. You know what I mean? Just to kind of not have to explain who you are or explain what you like. And that's such a big thing. I don't know what I'd do in my life without my friends. And I'm super grateful to have more than one. All you really need is one good one. But I really kind of learned that lesson at that age, because it was nice just to really have a tribe. That was a great thing. The other part of it was kind of learning industry, and you get like a crash course of it when you do these reality shows like this, especially like singing reality shows. So you learn how TV works, and you learn how labels work and what they're looking for. I remember going back my second year for Idol, and during, because there's three auditions before you even get to the main celebrity judges. I remember the producers coming out and they're saying, "We, this is a TV show, number one. This is not a singing competition." And that really
Whoa.
just like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? She's like, you gotta be able to hit a note, at least stay in key, but we're looking for a story and we're looking for ratings. This is nothing, this is not about singing.
Yo.
But also that also is real in the sense of artistry too. Because my thing is, you could still be a good singer, but if you can't relate to nobody, if you can't connect with people, then what's the point of singing? You know what I mean? Is what's the point of sharing your gift in the sense? You know what I mean? Not singing just to sing cool, but if you're going out to share and to, I guess, move people, you got to be relatable, or at least have some relatable quality, or know how to appeal to others. So I took that from Idol, and I took that statement always stuck with me, is that we are not a singing competition. This is a TV show. And it took me years to really like understand the quality in that statement, because I was, as a kid, you're just kind of like bitter. You're like, what? You know what I mean? I sing. I'm here just to sing. But also, it's more than just singing. It's making an impact on who you are with your gift. So that was a big part of it. Once again, please stop me. I am long-winded.
I won't stop you because I'm long with it too. And I'm listening just because I was thrown back when they came in there and said, this, hey, look, this TV is not a singing competition. I would have been thrown back with that. And you being a teenager, like you said, look, I'm here to sing. My mom signed me up for singing. Now you gotta put on several different hats, I'm assuming, because everybody has a story. That makes perfect sense though, because a lot of those people did have some drooling story about somebody doing something to them and what their childhood was like, but it was to kind of, I guess, get the voters to call in. I guess the sadder your story, the more voters you get.
Yes, or the more specific your brand is. Again, it's a relatability thing. And again, that took me years to really get that. And as a 16-year-old, I'm still figuring out who the hell I am. I don't know who I am. So that it's really that was it was hard for me to kind of figure that out, because we had PR people, we had, you know, media folks, we had stylists, we had all this, and just kind of figuring out our brand. And I'm just like, I don't know. This is my first exposure being around people that I feel connected with in a sense of what I love. I'm still figuring that out.
Right.
So, because there's some people that win that just don't have, or not even win, but that are successful, that don't have the saddest story, but they're that girl next door, and that's who they are, true and true. And you see it when you look at them. You hear it when they sing. You know what I mean? Everything, it's cohesive. It's very to the point, and they get what they're selling. And not to make it about branding, but it is also a business, and you also want to give somebody everything you are in the best version of you are in that moment, you know, because we all change. But for whatever this project is, whatever this song is for, and wherever I am in my life right now, I want to give you all of that through my music or through, you know, through whatever medium we're giving you. It's not even just through singing. This is any creative, you know, whatevers. But yeah. Yeah.
But you absolutely do pour your all into the music, but it's like, as a teenager, and I know that you went back, if you can go back to the teenage Dre, the second time, was it your choice or was your mom like, no, you can go, I want the world to see my baby? Like, what was that second time like?
The second time was my choice. And at first, it was in a kind of spiteful spirit, because I wanted to show them they was wrong, low key. But that's not cute, you know, because, and I went, and then I sang, because again, there's stages before you go. The producers recognized me. They said, yeah. He literally told me, I don't like your voice. It sounds like I blew into a balloon and let it go out slowly. Verbatim, this is what they told me. 16 years old. But you have good ratings and a lot of people liked you last year, so we're going to put you through. So I was a little upset in that moment, because my thing is, if you don't like me singing, don't have me on here. But then also, it's not a singing competition in that sense. So after a day of me pouting and throwing a fit, again, childish, I switched my perspective and it was cool. What can I get out of this? So I was chilling at top 10. All I wanted to do was make tour. Y'all could cut me at 10. That was my goal. You know, and everybody wants to be like, well, why wouldn't you want to win? Winning is cool too. But as long as I make top 10 and I get to go on tour and I get to share these folks and make this check, I am good. I could get what I need out of this show.
That part.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
That part,
so
yeah.
That was that. So when I went back the second year, my perspective changed, and it was my choice. And I went with a different mindset. I wasn't there to win. I was there to do the best I could and run with the opportunity that came with it after.
Yeah, when I look back at the American Idol where you were on, you know, it did look like you just were having fun, especially when you sang Sometimes I Cry Now by Eric Benet.
Yeah.
How old were you a teenager singing that song? You know what that song was about, and yet they got a teenager up there singing. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I had an idea of it at the time. You know, I don't think I could really understand it as far as experience, but yeah, I did. And I stand by that song. I love Miss America. A lot of the producers didn't like my song choices ever, because I have an old soul. I just like certain music. And then when you get on these TV shows, you hear the same songs. And I'm just like, I didn't want to do it. So Eric Benet, like, Sometimes I Cry, I have to fight for. DeBarge, I Like It, I have to fight for. I sang Reasons, Earth, Wind & Fire, I had to fight for that song. Didn't want me sing any Master Blaster, Stevie Wonder. They didn't want me singing that. I was like, I don't want to sing my Cherie more. I want to sing, you know what I mean? Them B cuts or them songs that you don't ever hear. These artists that people, I would say black folk know, but like you don't hear on the daggone mainstream radios. Give these artists love. They're great songs.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not about it. And I was fighting for it. And they were just like, well, you're not going to get votes. I said, I don't care. I sound good. This is what I do.
Yeah,
you know, I may not know who I am as a person completely, fully at that time, but I know what I do as a singer and as a vocalist and as a musician. This is what I do. So don't take it away from me. You know, and the few songs that they, thank you. The few songs that they did pick, I didn't do good on, like Endless Love and Only the Good Night, Raggedy. But, you know, I'm very particular in my life with who I bring in and what I do. And I always kind of have been that way. I'm a little stubborn about it, but I stand by it because it's always done me good.
And I would think that's what you need in this industry, integrity. You like, you know, fighting for that song actually landed Eric Benet to come up there and tell you personally, while the other people, they were reading their little tweeters or twits or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Benet came up there personally. This was a song that you fought for. And he came up there personally, sat next to you. He told everybody in a way, okay, yeah, y'all did good. However,
yeah.
And he looked at you and told you how fabulous. How did that make you feel knowing that you fought for that song and you won? Like, it had to have been that that moment.
No, I was good. My thing is, y'all cut me right here. Y'all send me home. Like you said, I won. I did this and I did it the way I'm proud of. And I stand, like I said, again, I stand by my decision. Whether the masses like it or not, I'm proud of what I did. And it was my choice. Because the one thing I would kind of break my heart or really get me is if I left on something that somebody else made me do, or, you know, not made me do. I have, you know, but somebody else talked me into. So to me, that was it. I was like, cool, y'all could cut me. I remember when I did get cut, there's a video of it too. Like J-Lo, Randy, Steven, they came up to me after and they're like, remember them telling me, it's okay if you want to, rubbing my shoulder and shit, talking about, you know, it's okay if you want to cry, like you let it. I'm like, I'm good. I am good. Y'all got my damn name spelled right for these checks. I'm good. I'll see you at tour.
Why do we have the same personality? I didn't know this, but I'm looking like, oh my God, this is me. I'm talking to me, like, for real. When you know that you've won, like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it doesn't mean it's not a ranking. It's how you feel internally. I won. Cut the check.
Yeah, exactly. I won. And my thing is, what you're not going to do is try to, I mean, and I know it's maybe for rates or whatever, but you're not going to diminish the accomplishment that I did do right now.
Mm-hmm.
And don't, you know, especially as a child, we're not going to, you know, try to make it a depressing thing of, oh, we didn't make it all the way. Celebrate what I just did.
Right. Because what they'll do is they'll show those clips of you crying and won't even show all the times you done sang your ass off. Like, no, exactly. you're not gonna get this moment. Okay.
Exactly.
Now we gonna move on to these covers that you do, because you don't shy away from the genres of music either, which is what I love, because although your voice is beautiful, it's not like you set yourself in the box musically. So we have you covering songs by Stevie Nicks, Alan Stone, you know, Unaware. I know I seen you up there singing that, like I said, Maxwell. Mm. So when these covers come to you, which I'm so thankful for, you know, do you have a favorite one that you don't mind singing over and over again?
Oh, a cover? It depends on the mood, but I will say I love singing Edge of 17, that Stevie Nicks song. And I love singing Cruising. It's played out, but I love singing that damn song.
It's, you snap one, on it.
Thank you. It's one of them songs I just do not get tired of, because I grew up loving Smokey Robinson. This is like one of my idols. So I never get tired of singing. It's just always a good groove. It's a good pocket, depending on who's playing.
And I wanted to touch on that, because you are young, but you do have this old soul. And I noticed that you did mention three people that were pretty much your favorite: Smokey Robinson, like you mentioned, yes. Patti LaBelle.
Yep.
And then we have Prince, but you know how I feel about Prince, so I'm going to save that later, because there is a request to get out there. But Smokey Robinson Cruising, like you said, what's your favorite Patti song that you can sing and that you can cover? You don't get tired of.
Oh, Love and Need to Want You.
Ooh.
If you, there's a video of me singing with me and my girls. Listen, and I'm very proud of it. We snapped. I love singing that song. I'm a Patti fan down. Like mm-hmm. I was so, I guess just infatuated with her as a kid. I don't have cable no more, but I haven't had cable in a long time. We'll probably get into that later because I haven't. Before I moved to New York, while I was doing my first album, I was jumping around, and then after that, I was homeless for a while. I was living on my car. I don't want to say homeless. Just I was living on my car. I couldn't afford. Anyway, we'll get into that later. But anyway, but when I was a kid, I remember like on Sundays on BET, they'd have like, you know, the gospel videos popping up. And there was a video of her, and I remember to this day, it was at Stella Awards, and she was singing Walk Around Heaven, which I love Walk Around Heaven.
Oh, my God, yes.
Mighty Clouds of Joy, I love. Because all them falsetto singers I grew up on, I like Philip Bailey, Mighty Clouds of Joy, Stylistics, all them, Delphonics, all them. But I saw that video and I was just obsessed. I said, who is this woman? And I could not get enough. And every album, every live performance, every flick of the wrist, every shoe kicked off, I was here for it. I am obsessed with that woman, and I got the pleasure to meet her too. And she's just the most loveliest woman ever. I got to go backstage and like chop it up with her. She was just a national treasure.
Okay?
Yeah, she do. I can't talk highly enough of this Patti.
But you're right. Patti definitely came at a time where, look, she wasn't scared to, like you said, kick off that shoe. She wasn't scared to roll on the ground, but we hadn't seen that. You know what I'm saying? It's like when she sang, she left it out there. I see that in you. I see that in Fantasia. We don't get a lot of that anymore. Well, I know when I'm looking at people singing, it's like they so rehearsed that they scared to get nasty with it. And I'm like, that's what I was brought up on. You don't have to get down and split your pants. You mentioned a few other singers with the high falsetto. And I just want to say, we don't get that anymore. You know, like you said, Philip Bailey, everybody kind of sounds alike. So that's why I tell you, your sound is so refreshing. What do you think is up with our falsetto singers? Like, where they at?
I honestly think they're there. They're just not on the, they're not on the charts like that as they should be, but it's starting to become more popular. Because I remember when I was on Idol, it was not a thing. I got dragged for singing falsetto. It just wasn't in style or in trend anymore. And again, growing up, like you heard who I listened to. I'm like, if you ain't singing falsetto, you really ain't, you know, that's the only singers I knew. Mm-hmm. That's what I grew up on. So it wasn't a thing, but I feel like you got a lot of them out there. They're just not on the, not on the radio. And also R&B changed.
Man. You know,
it changed a lot. The sound, it changed. The groove, and even like saying everything is so syncopated now, which, you know, ain't nothing wrong with it. But there's not a lot of, you're not getting them Luther songs. You ain't getting them Anita songs. You're not getting them like just kind of groove love ballads in 80s and like 90s R&B, or even like 70s like R&B, like Whispers, and you know what I mean? Not getting none of that.
You're right. And I want to touch into that. So I think I'm going to have you for another 30 minutes if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Because we got to cover so much about who Dre Scott is. And, you know, like you said, you touched on a little bit of where I want to go, because it ties into you being resilient. And I know you mentioned, you know, sleeping in your car. And that's going to tie into part two of me talking about Black Denim, which was the first. And when I tell you, this is so damn dope. Let me name a few of these songs, because how old were you when you created Black Denim?
I was 20 and 21 when I wrote it.
20 and 21, got songs out. Shoulda Known Better. The intro, Thread by Thread. Love Was the Excuse. Catch. And I'm like, get out my head, please. Get out my head. But Black Denim has a story, especially when I know you mentioned, and again on the Terrell Show, this is where I heard you say you came out of your own pocket to book your tours and things of that nature. So I wanna tell a whole story with this beautiful voice, how you can continue to keep it moving. So we covered the American Idol, and yes, we covered, you know, basically where it all started. But now we're about to get into the thick of it and let people know, you know, maybe the ugly patches. So we got a few more minutes before we hit 30. But I wanted to talk about, before Black Denim, I wanted to talk about this request that I got. Okay.
Okay.
I know that you know that this request is coming up, but still put on your acting chops and act so surprised when I ask you this. So, Dre, I'm looking and I'm seeing all these covers that you've made. And I mean, you have beat them down to the damn ground, like down to the ground, songs that are classics. But I noticed that, you know, Prince is somebody who you said you listen to and that you love, and can't go wrong with a Prince song, right? But there is Prince, out of all of his songs, Dre, for real, it is Adore. That's my favorite song, Prince song in the entire world. When that song comes on, I'm just listening to a man describe how much he loves someone. And he's saying, even if he was struck blind, the beauty he'd still see, right?
Yeah.
So I'm putting a pitch out there. Okay. When you doing your covers, do you think, number one, the world needs to hear you show out with Adore? And then, like, number two, can you be like, you know, this was highly requested by Keisha. Put your phone down.
Yes. I'll definitely do it.
Oh, if you do that, let me tell you how much bragging rights that'll be, for real. But the song, what's your favorite Prince song, by the way, before I get into mine? What's yours?
Oh, mine is, and it's off and on, not off and on. A lot of people either don't know it, or when they do hear it, they're like, I don't like this. But it's Sometimes It Snows in April.
Yes, and you know what?
Favorites.
A lot of people didn't bump that. I wonder why.
They did not like it. I love that, and I love Call My Name.
Oh, yeah. Call My Name. Call My Name was really, all you heard was his voice. You know what I'm saying? Like, When you play that song, even though you hear the instruments, you hear Prince over all the instruments. I love that song too. So we are going to get into Black Denim. We go get into Feelings, because you listen, I'm tired of you showing out with your voice up in this thing. When you sang Feelings, the way your voice, that I don't know, I don't know the vocal terms, but the way your voice went up and down, woo woo, that part, I hate that I even said that. I hate.
You better woo woo. You better.
I hate myself for that. And you should have seen the way my finger was going up and down, like I was really doing something. But we go get into Feelings, we go get into Million Shades, we go get into Black Denim, and again, Dre Scott. So we're going to cut this now, and the next time, you know, I pick up, it's going to be part two, and we just go straight into, like you mentioned, what phase of your life were you in when you were, you know, sleeping in the car, and you still having the strength to get up and singing bars places that you might not even hang out in, that you go singing for a check, you know?
Yep.
So, I mean, you got to do it. You got to do it, because if nobody is going to believe in you, at least you got you. So we go cut this now, and people be ready for an extended version with Dre Scott. All right, Dre, you about to get another link, and you know how this go, okay?
All right.
All right, people, be listening for part two. Okay, people, we got the extended version with the Dre Scott. That's one T, by the way. Yeah, just one T, you know. I had to be corrected myself. I was like, oh, wait, you know. But Dre, you have given us a beautiful story of how it all began. Just being around people who were into sports, but, you know, you were into the arts and into singing, and you tapped into your gifts early on to the point your mama was like, everybody go hear my baby's voice, okay? So you ended up on American Idol, and you did it your way. And it felt like, to me, what I heard is you were being prepped for it, didn't even realize it, knowing that how the industry works, how they want you to be one thing. You still stood strong, even as a teenager. Pretty much... you for, you know, the manhood portion of it. So
I mean, yes and no. There was trials, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, let's talk about it, the trials of it, and that's kind of where I was headed. So let's talk about your trials with in getting here.
Yeah, well, okay, so I guess after that, after Idol, I got signed by a sub-label through Universal. And that was, I mean, it was cool because we was doing like straight R&B stuff. I'm talking about, we was working with like Eric Benet folks, like, and like his, like doing straight R&B. But then the label looks at me and then they see, oh, you know, you're a skinny white dude, or skinny at the time and pale skinned. But you're going to do pop music. So all this music that we did, just, we didn't do nothing with it. And then we released this raggedy ass pop song. And that was me kind of just like, okay, well, I'm young. I don't really know what to do. Cause you know, we got to kind of go with what the label's saying. And that's when still to this day, I don't regret it, because I learned a lesson, and I'm glad I learned it that early in life. But man, I just, that song, that video to this day just makes me cringe, or how we say it over here, makes my ass itch. I don't like seeing it. I don't like hearing it.
What song was this that they made you do?
It's called Her Crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. Do yourself a favor and don't look it up. It is so bad. So bad. Anyway, long story short, that ended. Terrible deal. Terrible whatever. And I had to kind of start over. I didn't know what to do. So I moved to Hawaii and went to college, and was an education major. So I went to college and started, you know, working. I have three jobs to pay my tuition, cause I don't like debt. I don't like taking out loans. Was working at a cafe in the morning. Then I was teaching voice and ukulele at a school during the day. Then I was singing in luau shows. Because again, I started with Hawaiian music at night, and it was just kind of running me down. And there was one night where I was just so tired. I was learning a new show to sing in for at the mall that I was doing them gigs. And I fell asleep behind the wheel and totaled my car. And at that point, I was like, I can't do this no more. I'm exhausted. I'm stressed, I'm tired, I'm not happy. I need to do something that makes me happy. And I started writing, Black Denim. That's when I started writing Black Denim. And yeah, and then I just kind of just kept putting out my feelings and writing, and I was doing little shows here and there, whatevers, and started recording it in Hawaii at the time. One of my really good friends, I always bring the story up, my really good friend, Isaac, he brought it up to me. He's like, hey, why are you recording it here? Because Hawaii has so much talent, so much talent, but sometimes it's also an island, so I know everybody. He's like, you should go somewhere where you feel challenged. So you're absolutely right. So he asked me where the one place I felt super inspired, and I had just did a gig in Melbourne, Australia, and everything out there I just love, like R&B, like if you like what I like, you would love it out there. That's their pop. Every radio station, every bar, every club, it's all R&B. It's jazz, soul, funk. Like, it's, I don't have to explain what I'm doing. They get it. So I got up and moved. Didn't know anybody. I just got up and moved. And then kind of worked it from there. And I recorded my album out there, just, you know, doing open mic gigs and started meeting beautiful people out there. And they kind of just kind of helped me out and got it all done. And we got it going. And if it wasn't for my visa, I'd still probably be in Australia. Had a great time out there. And the musicians are ridiculous. And so all them folks are on Black Denim. And yeah. Yeah.
So let's touch on Black Denim. And man, I'm listening to your story and I'm like, geez, like, you still keeping your head up in an industry that can actually lay you out on your ass. You know what I'm saying? Like, we hear about this all the time. People who get the bad deals, or people who, by the time you end up paying out the big wigs, you left with nothing, but yet you still gotta, you know, do the shows and singing. Then they giving you songs that you hate. Eventually, some people resent singing again. Something that started out as a gift, something that they loved, they never want to get back out there again just because of the politics of it all. So it sounds like, you know, once you learned how to move, you learned how to move. So we got Black Denim. First off, I love the name. I would like to know what the name was inspired by, and what were you going through with this? Because listen now, this playlist is banging to be in your 20s, early 20s. Every song on there is just beautiful. So were you going through anything, or was this just things that you were picking up with people around you? But I first wanted to start off with, where did this name Black Denim come from?
So there's a song on there called Black Denim, which is not why I wrote it. So the song is different from what the actual name is. So Black Denim, there's no really specific theme of this album, but that album is basically, it was just different stories, different trials, tribulations, wins, happiness throughout my life, that I either didn't know how to deal with, or was just super excited about, and kind of just all kind of put together. So number one, black, black's my favorite color. I love anything black. Like, all the walls in my house are black. Like, my closet is 90% black. I love black. I find stillness in the dark. I prefer it nighttime. My mother's a beautiful black woman. Black is just a color that resonates with me. And then denim, if you look at it, denim is a compilation of different fibers. If you really look at it, some of them are thick, some of them are brittle, some of them are twined really, really tight. Some of them are loose, some of them could be frail, but when you put them all together, they make this really durable fabric. So that was just my way of saying, this is my life. It's a whole bunch of different things that may not be the best, but altogether it makes me, and I'm strong. That's what Thread by Thread is about. It's just all these different threads of my life put together to make this fabric of my story.
Man, I'm
Yeah.
speechless and I don't get like that, but I'm sitting, man. Okay. So that was a perfect way to even break down denim because it can withstand a lot of stuff. I still listen. I still
Yep.
got some jeans from back in the day, honey. Listen, the little leg part getting a little holy, but for the most part,
But it's still
denim
going.
withstand some stuff, okay?
It's
So
still going. And that's
when
how I see my life. It's
yeah.
denim.
It is definitely in your body of work. It's in your voice. So when you have this song and such a beautiful body of work with black denim, I noticed that, when it comes, well, first off, I'm a lyric head. I have to always go and read the lyrics and then listen to the song. But as I scrolled down, I saw that you had a few other people writing with you. So how does the writing process go with you when you bring in other people to join you in?
For what do you mean, for Black Denim?
Yeah, for Black Denim.
Well, the only song that was written was, well, that the only song that, and it wasn't really written, it was again, my good friend Isaac. He had a line in his songbook because he's an amazing singer-songwriter, that I was like, I really like that. Are you using this? Because it was just a random line by itself. And it was Living in Peripherals because I'm always on your side. For my song Catch, I was like, can I take this? And he's like, yeah. So, legally, I'm gonna give him the credit because he wrote that line. But everything else, it was me. I didn't collaborate with nobody. I didn't start collaborating until this new project. I'm not that, that's a really that's a new that's a new feeling and that's a new experience for me that took a long time to get because I'm a very vulnerable writer in a sense. I don't like to show my imperfections off the bat, and most of it's most not even most every time I write it's based off of experience or emotion. So my thing is you can't tell me what it is because this is my story, so it's hard for other people to give me what they think would be good when it's my experience.
Man, I'm listening to all. Well, I was basically been pumping your music since I have seen you. And Black Denim, I don't know, it pulled me in. Not that I'm going through anything. I just think that it's a long time since I've heard music that spoke to me in a way where I can go to the next song. It's usually one hot song and I'm keeping it on repeat. But with Black Denim and your song choices, and like you said, you being vulnerable, it tells a story I think that anybody could relate to through anything. So does this start off as poetry, or do you have a beat in your mind when you coming up with these songs and saying, okay, I'm gonna sing?
Sometimes it's just a melody. Well, I Don't Need Your Love was a poem that I put melody to. A lot of times it's just a melody or a thought or a concept. Sometimes just like whatever I'm going through right now. And then I'm just kind of writing out lines, singing, or humming, or I'll grab the guitar. So like every song I wrote on my guitar, I did all the chords, I did all the backing vocals, arrangements, everything is me. Produced it. That's why I'm very, and I always say that because some people are like, well, you always want to be more, excited about your next project. I said it's hard because this first one meant so much to me because every single aspect of that project was mine. There was no, you should do this, or there was no, here I have this, write to it. Everything was me. So when I write, it starts off with a feeling, and then it goes from there. I'm melodic for the most of my shit is melodic. I'm just a melodic person, so I start with melody 90% of the time.
So when we talking about Black Denim, and I keep pushing that because I want people to go and listen to it for themselves.
Thank
It's
you.
a story, and no, thank you because you bringing no shade to nobody else out here singing when I say that. But as you know, I told you I'm at a particular age. I ain't got time for what I'm hearing now. I need to turn on some music And I, look, I'm at the age where I clean to music, okay? So I need me some good cleaning music.
I feel that.
And you got some good cleaning music where I can press it, and I ain't got to come back and be like, damn, let me skip over that. But the one thing I really want to highlight out of your music and what we're about to move into next is, in closing, I mentioned how you said with Black Denim, that is your baby.
Yeah.
But you had to come out of pocket to see it coming. Like, as I was listening to your interview, how you had to pretty much get people on board and pay them. And can you give me a walkthrough of what that feels like to, you know, pretty much believe in yourself so much that you coming out of your own pocket to book your shows and all that? Can I know that ugly part of it?
I mean, I guess the ugly part was just kind of figuring out how to do it. But when I tell you, that was one of the most carefree, happiest times of my life. Because I feel like that was the first time I actually really got to just do Dre and be who I was and not have to worry about others reaping, you know, the repercussions of it. Because if I fail, then I fail. That's all it was. You know what I mean? So it was just that kind of like, you know, it's not like, oh, well, the label needs this because we got to make the money back. No, it's cool. And also, I didn't grow up. I grew up listening to songs that had instruments on it. And that's no shade to new. I love new music. All music is valid. You know, all music is valid. But just what I grew up on was instruments. So I just knew what I needed to do. Make some money. I wrote everything. Everything's already written out. Grab a great guitar. So I'm not the best musician. I could play, but I wouldn't. I'm a vocalist. But grab a great music guitarist and a drummer and a bass. There are instruments on that track, and they were paid for hire. How much will you do for this session? Cool, thank you. We recorded all that in my boy's attic. We didn't even do it in the studio, and we mixed it in that attic too. All in Australia. Shout out to Julian Steele. But it was a lot. After that was all done, because I was coming off The Voice. I was a backing vocalist on The Voice in Australia. So after that ended, I had to go back to America. So flew back to Hawaii because my visa ended. So I couldn't go back. And I wasn't making money like I was making in Australia. So I had to figure out what the hell I was going to do. I just had this album that just dropped, and all I really know is get on stage and share it. You know, I'm not the biggest social media whiz. I'm still learning that game. The formula is I'm still trying to figure it out. But what I know is get on stage and show it, because I know I could sing, and that's what I'm confident in. That's the one thing I'm not letting nobody take from me. I could sing. So I had to book my shows. I had no manager, I had no team, you know. And like when people, like the kids now, to say I'm independent artists got stylists, they got PR people, they got, you know what I mean, even if it's, they got their friends or whatever, they got a team of people pushing their shit. I didn't have none of that. I was my own publishing, I was my own label. I worked my ass off. Luckily, I had my friends that were playing with me. So as much as I wanted to pay them way more, I didn't have the means to, and they were just along for the ride. So in that case, in that sense, I had them to kind of just help me play, you know, as far as like singing background and musicianships. But I had to pay for all that. I had to pay for their flights. I had to pay for their hotels. I had to pay for all that shit. So I couldn't afford rent. And tour my music. It came down to a decision of, all right, do we want to push this album that I've already spent a lot of money and time and very proud of, or do I just do a show here and there and try to, you know, hope it goes somewhere? And I was like, no. So I park at the beach, sleep in my car, go to work, had a gym membership, shower at the gym, go to work, rack up that money. We sold out two shows in London. We did four Blue Notes in Hawaii. We did Yoshi's twice in Oakland. Opened up for Jasmine Sullivan in Florida. We did a show in sold out a venue in New York. We were moving, and I'm super proud of that because I did that. You know, again, with the support of my friends, in the sense of they were along for the ride as long as they didn't have to come out of pocket, and that helped me so much. But I didn't make money on these shows because the cost was so much just to even get there. But I knew it was gonna benefit me in the long run. Same with the Terrell show. I didn't have a home like that. And when I say homeless, this is by choice, again, because I could go back to California, to the Bay Area, and sleep in my mom's or my dad's. I said no, because I know I'm stubborn that way. I like doing shit on my own. I like the sense of pride that I did it. And made the decision to push my music like that. And yeah, so, but again, it's not a complaint. And to me, it's not a struggle. It sounds like one. I was so happy. Because I was doing what I love, and I did it again. I was doing it my way.
Did it your way.
My way and my music. And nobody could tell me that. No label could tell me shit. Nobody could tell me shit because y'all ain't paid for nothing. Y'all weren't helping me push nothing. You had no say, had no hand in my pot. I'm licking that shit clean.
When I tell you, I said this on the first portion, we are so much alike when it comes to just thugging it out. My sister always say, oh, you dance to the beat of your own drum. And one of my favorite songs is I Did It My Way. It's really no other way to live it. You know, like shit, if I'ma do it, it's gonna be on me, you know. Yeah. And I'm hearing you and I'm like, see, that's how you know really what you made for, when you not listening to everybody else. And I love how you said, look, I could have went back home. But you bet it on you once again. And Dre, you winning, man. You winning. So let's get into, so we got Black Denim, and I'm going to keep saying Black Denim, okay? Because this thing needs to be circulated. Now, you might not be fancy on social media, neither am I, but we go get some people to go and be nosy, all right? Type in Black Denim when you go on YouTube or wherever you look, wherever your social platforms. Check it. Type in Black Denim, Dre Scott, 1T, and listen, just let him tell a story. The whole time, you had no clue, and I'm talking to my listeners, what this man was going through while he poured everything into Black Denim, and you did that. Dre, you did that. I look at the cover and I wouldn't have known. Like, beautiful black couch, everything. I mean, when I tell you did the damn thing. So then you come back. You know, because you got that spirit in you where you like, no, I'm gonna come back swinging. So we have Feelings that, you know, originally was album, you know, studio, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And then you was like, no, let's tweak it up a bit and go live. Dre, did you know once you went live, got your background singers, like I said, I don't know why my eyes landed on them looking like they were just so proud of you, like that they got the smiles on their face. And as you singing, the band players is getting into it. But did you know it was going to take off like this?
No, I didn't know at all. I knew it was gonna have a better response though than the track. So this is like, okay, this is new Dre. You know what I mean? This is now moving from DeAndre to Dre Scott.
Right.
Yeah, because there's so many artists out there named DeAndre. But like I was saying before, this is a new, because I'm signed to Sierra now.
Okay.
So this is it, and it took a while for me to sign to her because I was so used to the freedom of my own creativity. But I did want to push more than what I could do on my own. You know, I was kind of, I'm a vision board person, and I was like, I was, you know, asking God, I was putting it out. I needed a team. I needed like a group of, I needed a team because I was getting kind of burnt out a little bit, and I wanted to get to the next step. And I feel like I paid my dues with Black Denim. But so this whole new thing is me collaborating with people. This is me writing to a beat. This is, you know, having another writer in the room, and it's new. So this, it's kind of more mainstream R&B-esque, you know, not completely, but it was new for me. So when I did the track, it wasn't completely how I would do it. So I know it would be cool. So it would reach another audience that wouldn't really like love Black Denim off the bat. But when we did it live, which I was really, you know, pushing for, I really wanted to do a live video, which, you know, and I was just like, you know, we're going to do the live video because the label was like, we should do a music video. So that would be cool, but I think we should do live as well. So I came out of pocket and did the live video because I'm a live singer. That's what I do. And I recorded it. We recorded it the way I would have done it off the bat because that's just fully Dre. The whole vocal arrangements, the groove, that's just kind of how I vibe, and this is what I do. So I knew it'd get a better response only because it was a bit more authentic, number one. And I don't know, it was just a vibe, it was just good. Once I got into the ending, once we got into them stabs, and I started like messing around with the so patient, don't keep me waiting for you, all those like the rounds and stuff, I was like, oh no, this is gonna bop. Whether 2 people or 2 million people like it, it's gonna bop. I didn't realize it was gonna pop off the way it did organically like that. So I'm super grateful.
Man, first off, you saying okay, because I had to keep myself together. Secondly, this is what you were talking about. So this is what's missing. And Dre, look, you know we going over. You go be you making history. Like I've done an hour. But I think we go have to push it to another
30.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, yep. I didn't mean to shout. Okay. I got to get better with this. But no, what you doing, and I don't think you, well, maybe you do realize, is bringing back those instruments. The instruments and music for me, now we going back to old school, the music that you were brought up with is really all I know. Like, that's what made me fall in love with a saxophone. And that's what made me like tune in to when I hear a drum coming in or a trumpet. Now, I might not know the type of instrument, but back in the day, that was the intro to a lot of songs. You heard when it was about to get good and gritty, you heard the drums, you heard all of that. And then you heard the voice.
Yeah.
And so that's what you did with Feelings. As you're standing there, you gave everybody a chance. You got the background singers to have their opportunity. Then you had the bass player or the drums. When you got quiet and you had that guitar going. I think I'm naming the instruments right. That might be something totally different.
It was the bass.
Okay, because look, I was about to call it something else. But yeah. you pretty much let them all meet. And then your voice came into it. So I knew just because of how music has saved me that this song was going to be it. Like I'm so proud of you and even making this live because that's exactly what we needed. And when I say me, I'm standing with the people, the real music heads. That's kind of we missing what you are providing. And you know, I've already told you, you know, as we began to talk, we need this. We need this. We need to sit down and know when we press and play, somebody like, yo, who is that? Because we're not getting that. So I thank you for even saying, now we going live with this, because I promise you, as much as I like the track, I love your voice, period. But I know I'm a feel like I'm at a whole concert when I see and hear this. So that was like in one take, right? You just was like, okay, we going, or what was that, like a practice session, or just pressing record and we go leave it all out on the table?
Yeah, that's one take.
One take. That's what I'm talking about. I want to get like you one day. Like, so, although this is your interview, I have to say, I have been titled and called the Queen of Karaoke. Okay. Thing is, I can't sing. Okay, Drake. Now, I can't hold a candle to you, but you make me feel like I can when I'm singing along with you, when you singing that song. And we know I'm not going to ask to sing with you or nothing like that. Don't worry about it. I would not hurt myself like that. But I think that your music and what you're doing is breaking a lot of barriers. You know, it's kind of like how Cat Williams pretty much is challenging the comedians. Like, look, come on. I think you put some shots fired with making feelings and going live, because look, you bringing these vocals and you not playing. So with part three, because I see we pushing on 30, we're a little over 30. We go wrap it up with talking about Million Shades. Beautiful. You know, and letting people know, like you said, Dre Scott. We had DeAndre, now we got Dre Scott. And so on part three, we go wrap it up with a pretty bow. And I got another song request too. Beautiful. So I got two requests. So, okay, y'all, stay tuned. Dre is making history in 2024 with a part three, an extended version with Mr. Dre Scott, 1T. And y'all, listen, go to YouTube or wherever you want to. Look up Black Denim, okay? Mm-hmm. Dre Scott, 1T. Oh, no, don't think. No, look, they going to have to thank you. Okay. So, guys, stay tuned. We got part three coming up with Mr. Dre Scott. All right. All right, Dre, listen, this the longest I done talked to a guy on the phone. I don't know how long. Shit, 2024 is all right with me, okay? But you started out as a journey. You know, we started with DeAndre, you know, and correct me with the last name, but I think I'm going to nail it. We started out with DeAndre Breckensick.
Yeah, Breckensick.
Yeah, Breckensick. So we started out with DeAndre, and now, of course, like you said, okay, I'm coming in as Dre Scott. You gave us a beautiful, beautiful picture of your journey, and just knowing that you got thick skin, like for you to enter spaces that, you know, you're not really familiar with, but still have a stamp on the things that you do, it take a lot. A lot of people bow down, and we don't know who they are when they get into the industry. It's been so many people that I've seen and I'm like, they've changed, you know, but I love that you staying true. And then we talked about feelings, and I love the words in that before we get into Million Shades. So patient, don't keep me waiting for you. I think a lot of people can relate to that. So as you write this and you talking about the feelings that you have, you know, headspace wise, where were you at when you wrote this beautiful song?
So this is this was me, this amazing writer named Marcus. He wrote a lot for Snow Allegra and a couple other folks, and then Sierra. Sierra helped write this one as well.
Get out of here. No way.
Yeah, Sierra did.
Goody Sierra.
Yep.
No. Okay. Shout out Sierra. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
All the talent in one room. So okay. So.
but feeling. Yeah. Feelings is just basically like that first, when you first start talking to somebody, you know, this is not like we started dating or, you know, we went on a date. This is like when you first start talking to somebody and you know it's turning into something, but you're not, we're not either, whether it's you or me, or we're not acknowledging that this is something. So this is just like, you got me feeling, am I tripping? You got to let me know, because I'm, is it too soon for to call it love type of shit? And I'm patient, but just like, don't keep me waiting for it. So we all kind of been in that situation. I've been there with my now partner, you know, I'm now my husband. You know, it was my first kind of like feeling of, oh, okay, this is something, but we're not acknowledging it. So that's basically what feelings is about, because we wrote this about 4 years ago. It's old.
So when you first met him, you were feeling it, but you was like, where we at? And now look at you, then he done took you off the streets.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, no,
that's what it's about.
I get that. I think that that's kind of what dating is nowadays. You know, it's like you just kind of looking like, so what are we doing? I got these feelings. You got these feelings, but do I need to dip? Because I'm being patient with you, but like you said, like, don't keep me waiting. And yeah. I love that song. You know, you're welcome. I think that that's a song where everybody can relate to. It doesn't matter what stage they are. Like, you know, it's just one relatable song. So I was like, damn, I wonder where he was headspace when you, especially doing those riffs towards the end. I was, man.
Oh, yo, thank you. Yeah, now, so that whole end part was me. So all the vocal arrangement was me. The end part I wrote, because that wasn't on the track. Again, this was just me taking, this is my take on my song, you know, if that makes sense.
Right.
So yeah, just kind of that. I'm a sucker for a good groove and a good pocket. One of my favorite like artists ever. And I kind of base my ear and like my arrangements around this artist, because I just love the way she keeps it just cool. And everybody looks at me sideways if you don't know the real T, but it's Tweet. I love Tweet. Yeah. Like, and I'm not talking, I mean, Oops and Call Me is a jam, you know, Turn the Lights Off, it jams. But getting to the albums, like Smoking Cigarettes, getting to like the album tracks, that whole Charlene album was amazing. But she's so good with just keeping at a good, a feel good pocket and just keeping the harmonies going. Harmonies and a groove. That's all I love. You can't go wrong with it. Can't go wrong with it. And Tweet is one of my favorite examples of that.
Tweet is sick. I love My Place.
Yes.
And is it Cab Ride or Taxi?
Yep.
When it,
yep,
when
Cab Ride.
Yep. When she used the intro to the TV show Taxi, I was like, shut up.
Yeah. So, okay. So you know about Tweet then.
Yeah, like for real. You talking, when I tell people I'm a music head, I appreciate music, period. And she is sick. I wish, you know, she would be more out there, but sometimes it's okay. You know what I'm saying? To stay in your lane and not do what everybody else is doing. You know, I want to get into A Million Shades, and I'm going to just go quote it just a little bit. I'm here and still, I'm hard to find. I blur the lines, I redefine. Too much, but still never enough. I feel so close, but out of touch. And so then we go into, how much can one heart take before one heart breaks? Now that's from Million Shades. And those few lines was like, yo. So can you walk me through Million Shades? Because that look, as the kids say, that's a bop too. I'm like, ooh, I wish he would quit, but I want you to keep going type shit. Million Shades.
Yeah, well, shout out to Brittany B and Sebastian Cole. And if you don't know them, their discography is ridiculous. Beautiful writers. Probably a lot of the songs that you love and know, Sebastian's been on. So shout out to them, because they helped me write that one. That one is like, as far as like all the other songs, that one's like an actual fully like collaborated song. Like Sebastian wrote that hook in like 5 minutes. I wrote the verses. Brittany did the B section. It was very, you know, kind of just, it was so much fun learning from them. And just kind of being around other artists or other writers. That was like the one experience where I really just like enjoyed writing with somebody else. But that song was, again, you could tell by looking at me, I am a mixed child. So, I am a mixed child and my mom is not mixed. I have a beautiful black mom and a white daddy and a very handsome white daddy. Don't get it twisted. Beautiful fucking parents. But how fair skinned I came out and blonde and blue eyes, I didn't fit in with the black community. And this basically what this song is about, because I was trying to figure out how to kind of talk about it, but I didn't want to be so specific. I wanted it to be general so anybody can put their own truth into it. But I wanted to always write a song about me not feeling enough, because I never did feel enough, because I always had to prove, or even like little things. I did BSU when I was in high school and they just weren't about it. They're like, you ain't black. You can't be a part of BSU. So it's kind of just like a song to talk about me not feeling in place in my own community because of how I look, and also just stating that, again, we're all a million shades of gray. We all the same thing. You know what I mean? We all, our experiences are different, but I come from that same upbringing. And I'll never claim I don't have the same experience as you outside, right. But I still take pride in who I am, in the culture that I was brought up with, in the people that raised me, and the people that I've surrounded myself with. I want to be allowed, in a sense, to be proud of that. And a lot of growing up, I felt very uncomfortable with it because I didn't present that way. And then I was too white for black folks, and I was too light. Again, I grew up with a black mom, so it's a little different. My mannerisms, culture references was just too different for the white kids, you know? And again, mm-hmm. I got both sides. I love everything I am. Because at the end of the day, I'm just Dre. Ain't no color attached to it. But I'm proud of the cultural aspects of what I was surrounded with, what I grew up in, who I am. So that song was just literally just stating like, yo, we are all the same. Again, I feel so close to out of touch. I'm just not black enough for y'all. Until I open up my mouth and sing, and now y'all want to claim me. It was a very that. My experience with that was really, I didn't love it growing up. I didn't love it growing up.
Damn, great. You know what? This song took on a whole damn different meaning for me, because I... when I listen to it, like you said, it's out there for anybody to kind of like get their own thought process.
Yeah.
But hearing you, this is kind of like a theme song for all our babies out there who, you perfectly put it, I don't know where I belong. You know, I know I'm here, but not, I ain't black enough for y'all. I'm not white enough for y'all.
Yeah.
You know, where do I belong? I really believe, and thank you for breaking that down, because we got a lot of mixed babies out here now, you know?
Yes.
They, I'm sure it's still, they still feel that. Like, they still feel it. So, man, this...
Yeah. But that's an end of situation. And I learned that from Sebastian when we was writing it, because I brought up the concept of what I wanted to talk about. He's like, let's make it general. There's a way to say that without saying it. So my thing is, because if you really just look at the lyrics, it's basically just about somebody that doesn't feel a part of. So that's anybody in their own circle, because that's, you know, you got it in social rankings, you know, for in your job, in your own family, in your race, in your sexuality, you know what I mean? We all got, there's all so many subcategories for everything. For all the gays, we got all them damn alphabets. You know what I mean? There's so much subcategories for everything. And it's beautiful to identify that, and you know, but a lot of times we identify it and then we turn it around and make it a you ain't us, which is it's so unfair. It's so unfair because, again, we're just people. We all the same thing. Like, we all a million shades of gray. It's just the same. We all the same thing. You just happen to be on this side, and that's beautiful. And I'm over here.
Yeah. I wish more people would understand. And I think, you know, what you said, it breaks down because you go always try to find yourself. Always. Every category that you mentioned, you know, I'm a girl with meat on my bones, okay? Mm-hmm. But when I walk along somebody that's thin, I'm still a woman, but there are times I don't feel like I belong. I'm still a woman. I still got TNA, but if you... I just happen to like a little bit more chicken, okay? But sometimes I feel slept on, you know, or... they might target, oh, you know, because I'm funny too. You know, I don't know if you can tell, I got a little sense of humor on me. Yes, you know, man. they want me to be the big funny girl. I'm like, look, Neil Carter is gone. Okay. You got Keisha. All right. So yes, I love that you broke that. You know who Neil Carter is. You like
I'm so glad you mentioned Neil Carter because her name is not being mentioned enough. And I'm glad you brought it up to keep her name alive.
Shout out to
alive.
Neil Carter. You know, Neil had a beautiful voice, by the way. You know what I'm saying? Give me the break. Give me a break.
Yep. So unique.
Yeah. So, Dre, I feel like I'm talking to like a long lost friend. I don't know where you've been all my life, but you are so talented. And I've, you know, as in doing my research, I see that you have pretty much covered a lot of stages in having to deal with a lot of different personalities and things of that nature. Before we go over with this one, part three, I know that, you know, like you said, singing is something that you are definitely confident in, but what do you do on days where you just don't feel like doing it and you on that stage? And it might not even be a stage that you want to be on. Is it something that you tell yourself to keep going?
Yeah, it's a conversation with me, I would say, because not every stage is. And also, I think that's one thing of why I still am successful, and I'm gonna claim that successful in my own right, because I don't shy away from gigs. You know what I mean? I will go sell out a whole theater. I'll go do a big festival and then come back and sing to four people at this bar. I'm not too good for any stage. And I know that because just work is never, with what we do, it's never guaranteed. So I'm going to take what I can get. Just every year, the standard goes up a little bit. You know what I mean? I'm not going to do 3 hours for $50. You know, right. which I kind of started off with. It's going to, you know, there's still a standard, but I'm not going to knock down a gig just because it may not be glamorous. But with that being said, yeah, a lot of these ones are not that fun in a little bit. They hurt, I want to say the soul, but I think they just hurt the ego sometimes, you know? And and I just got to, like, let myself know, just, hey, I'm singing, you know, I don't have a 9-to-5. I don't have a, you know, just in case job. I'm a musician full time, and I've been a musician full time, you know, for 5+ years now. And I'm very grateful for this opportunity, for this luxury of a life that I have, you know. Now I ain't living in mansions and shit, but
yet,
no. Yeah. I mean, I won't, no matter how much money I got, I'm not spending money on that.
Okay, that's a lot of house, ain't it?
Yeah, thank you. Who's cleaning? Who's cleaning all that? And I'm too cheap. I'm not paying nobody to clean my shit. Anyway, I got to remind myself that I'm doing this, and it may not be in the situation, but it is a luxury. You know, it does come with ups and downs, just like any job. any dream job that you love. You can own a business and you love it. There's gonna be times where it's just, yo, the numbers are down, and that's just what it is. So that's just kind of what it is. I gotta sing these weddings sometimes. I gotta be part of a wedding band, you know. I'm grateful for it because it pays well, and you know, get to travel, and the company more than anything is the best part of it. But I don't want to be singing these daggone raggedy wedding songs. I don't love them.
Yeah.
You know, and these are, you know, rich folks. So it's just, you know, I don't want everybody to be singing top 40, like pop songs. Not my thing. It's not fun. But at the end of the day, like I said, I'm still doing me. And I'm grateful enough to have, you know, a job being a musician. So I can't complain too much.
You are really, honestly, one of the dopest musicians that I have heard in a long time. I needed your voice. I needed your songs. I needed your story, you know. So I want you to give a shout out to a spiritual place, spiritual island. And I know that, like you said, this is where, you know, you got your teachings from, Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And I want you to just tell me what it means to you, because, man, I know in a lot of interviews you talk about your pretty much your connection to it. So what does it mean to you?
I mean, when you talk about, like, when days you're just not feeling good, you're just not feeling right, and sometimes, like, you get in your head and you get to comparing, or you're not at the point that you want to be at. I was having that moment this past couple months. I just wasn't excited about the thing, you know, what's yet to come, basically. I wasn't excited about the future because I didn't have much coming in that moment. I do this show every year for New Year's on Lanai Island in Hawaii. And I got the honor and privilege to sing with the amazing Shawn Ishimoto and my really, really close friend, Lena Tamore Robbins. If y'all ever seen, like, my old videos, she's the beautiful woman in the red hair. And we did a full, just 3-hour set of Hawaiian music. And the way that sparked my spirit up, and I'm talking about no English, straight Hawaiian traditional music, it just sparked my spirit up. I left that night just full, heart-wise, soul-wise, literally to tears. I was it reminded me that this is why I love music, but also it took me back to that start of music in general, and what I found so fascinating about it, which most people don't really get to experience with Hawaiian music, because again, it's niche, it's cultural music, so they're not gonna love it off the bat. But I've always been fascinated with voice, and there's so many vocal technique and the musicality that Hawaii brings, and the culture and the respect for others. And it's just, I take that with me everywhere I go, and I have to give thanks to it for Hawaii and Kanaka Maoli for Hawaiian people, because that's what kind of instilled me as a kid, you know, along with my mother and my father and my family as well. But Hawaiian culture had a really big impact on me as a kid, because it taught me how to be still. It taught me, outside of music, it taught me how to just respect my surrounding, respect my elder, respect the people that had come before me through Hawaiian music. So it means a lot more than just music. It's just, I think I am the man I am today because of Hawaii.
Yeah, I hear about it all the time. I've yet to be there, but I see so many people talk about the spiritual connection that they get, and you know, and I see that in you, believe it or not. It's like when I hear you talk about it in your interviews, number one, you seem so educated about it, so it's not like you just throwing it out as a place to hang out. You have a connection there. Like, it feels like what I hear you say is, it's like a call, and you call it, it calls you, you know.
Absolutely.
And I love that. And I love that you are attached to the music and the culture, because it really, it means a lot. You know, you can say you went somewhere, but if you haven't connected, have you really been there? You know what I'm saying? So, yes. Another song request, cause listen, we pushing 22 minutes. This is awesome. But, another song request. I don't know if you've covered this, but I, as you were talking about a falsetto, this one might challenge you. Keep Your Head to the Sky by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
You know, at the very end, how they get up there, mm-hmm. up there. Yep. Okay, so Dre, if you cover two songs, okay? if you decide to get on Facebook, because I don't know, I haven't seen you post anything on Facebook in a hot second. I think the last time I saw you, you had a video promoting the concert that you were going to do. Yes. But if you do a cover, okay, there's two requests. Put Your Phone Down podcast host Keisha has is Adore by Prince, favorite Prince song in the whole wide world. Yep. And Keep Your Head to the Sky, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Now, if you can okay. go ahead and say this was Keisha, Put Your Phone Down podcast, listen, I'm dropping the mic right then and now, okay? So, Dre, as we wrap this up, and we ain't got to wrap it up too fast, but as we wrap up this beautiful interview, I want you to know, I want to send a shout out to Quinn. Yes. Just how thankful I am. And I was mentioning this through email and saying that sometimes it just takes that one yes, you know. Absolutely. And your story is very parallel to mine, and that's why I feel like, you know, I'm smiling in my heart, because I too was like, you know what, I'm gonna have to do it my way. There's been times where this podcast, and I told you, it'll drop, and I'd be like, what the hell? I mean, I'm so upset, you know, but somebody who hears you will believe in you and give you a yes. So before we wrap up, I really want to just thank you for spending time with me, telling me your story, telling the listeners your story. I want to thank Quinn from the bottom of my heart, seriously, just responding. We started having our own little personal conversations, but it was just a yes, unexpected yes, but a yes. So before I go into anything else, I want to thank you for you. I want to thank Quinn and the Lord above for making this all happen, because when I tell you, a yes is really sometimes all you need.
Yep.
I was walking around like I'm big shit, chest all swole, like, yeah. Dre Scott said yes, you know, like I'm name dropping and shit. But
I appreciate that.
No, I appreciate you for real, for real. Like, and shout out to, you know, DeAndre, and I'm talking about you, who pretty much led me to all these different variations. I'm seeing you starting out on the American Idol. And then I'm like, wait, on the Terrell show. Then I'm seeing you on different stages, like I said, covering different songs. I think one time I was watching you and you was like, okay, y'all, I'm tired of singing this song, but I do it for y'all. Like, you just yep. being so real, so real with the audience. Like I said, sharing who you grew up with, it all brings you back to, like you said, the denim and how tough you are and how many fibers you have. And black denim then turns into million shades and saying, not only, you know, am I tough like denim? I'm me. Yes. A million shades of me, you know, so don't box me in. So, Living the Dead, Dre, who would you do a duet with?
Oh,
we got time. Ooh, you ain't see this one coming. Living the Dead.
Who would you duet with? That's hard. I would say, I would say
it could be anybody. You can name a bunch of them.
I mean, well, I definitely would love to do something with Tweet. I would love to do something with Amy Winehouse randomly. Oh. Because I love me some Amy. And just being in the same room as her, she just was just so grown musically. I would love to do something with Rochelle Pharrell. I would love to do something with I can't think. There's just too many folks. There's too many folks. I just admire and I draw inspiration for so many people. So
would you do
to narrow?
Would you do Shantae Moore?
Oh, I love Shantae Moore.
Shantae got them falsettos too. She sit up there and had that mini Rippleton hit you with the notes, and you'd be like, "Yo,
yep." I'd love to do something with Luther one day.
Yeah,
one day, you know. But there's a lot of folks that are just super inspiring.
Yeah,
right. You know, and I just think of those authentic artists that I just love.
And I hear it in your voice. Like when I listen to you, I do hear Maxwell. I do hear like it's you pay respect. It's not like you like, yeah, this is me and this is how I've always sounded. It's textures of everybody. It's even some little Jeffrey Osborne. And I love Jeffrey Osborne, by the way. You hear him, you know. And so this is who made you. And just wrapping up, you know, you've given me a beautiful story of you. And shout out to your parents and shout out to your family in Hawaii and just ending it up, wrapping it up. Where can we find you, Dre? Where can we find you? What's your social medias?
You can find me at I Am Dre Scott. That's on all platforms. New music coming out in a couple months. There'll be a tour schedule in the few more months coming up. Hopefully as well. We're working on that as well. So, yeah. But more than anything, listen to my music. That's the biggest compliment that anybody can give me. Listen to my music.
We are listening, Dre. We hear you. We want more of you. And look, if you're looking for like another background singer, it's this girl. Right. It's me right here. Now I could act like I'm singing, just pull my ass up on stage. You know what I'm saying? I'm an entertainer. I do that much, but no, we have had a fabulous time, Dre. And again, I'm just putting it out there. When you do those covers, just don't mention a sister, but no. Dre, we have enjoyed you. Listeners, you have listened to an extended version for the first time of Mr. Dre Scott. Listen, share, follow him. Let's get his brother his flowers because he out here just raining on us, okay? So, Dre, thank you so much. Thank you for your spirit. Thank you for your resilience and thank you for rocking with Put Your Phone Down podcast. Thank you for a yes. And Quinn, thank you. So until the next time, y'all, thank you for listening to Put Your Phone Down podcast with my special guest, Dre Scott. All right, Dre. Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you too. All right. Bye-bye.